Record. I can buy myself flowers. Some coffee or what? You know what I mean? Am I drinking coffee? Am I excited? Has it been a week off from the pod and I'm just excited to be back, guys? You guys, I really appreciate you saying a lot of nice words about me on my absence. That was awesome, brothers.
I already picked mine.
Tread, you idiot, Tread.
Why? Because I had parents that loved me.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Shut up, Tread. Because you know it's fire, bro. You know it's fire.
I want to stop being Tread's bitch. That's what I really want. Yeah.
Welcome back to your show, Tread.
I can buy myself flowers.
We lost Brad already.
That's right.
I'm over here.
The great roast of Brad. You're short. Rostafari,
hey,
brother.
Did we say anything about you being fat while you were gone?
Yes.
I feel like there is some fat stuff in
there. Oh, yeah, we did.
No, you guys are talking about my sandwich. You guys are like, who gets a sandwich named after him? And then you guys were like, low-key, though, it's pretty fire. It's a pretty good sandwich. So you're like roasting me, but then you're like, heavy compliments to the Tread. Like, what a sandwich created, huh?
It's an impressive piece of meat and bread, not gonna lie.
It's a gosh darn good sandwich you made there, buddy. I'm kind of on one today. I don't know if you can tell. I got my De Niro face on.
We're really excited to have you back, Tread.
Brad, why is your mic so far away from your face, bro? What are we doing?
Because he has a standing desk.
I have
now.
A new stand.
Really cool about it.
Oh, shit.
Look at this thing. It's actually kind of cool.
That dude's a podcaster.
No, you got to turn it all the way
around. Flip it upside down.
It's like facing downward for no reason at all other than that it looks sick. Yeah.
Now
you got to be like you're a rapper, like holding it like, what up? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, or I could just be like, let's get ready to rumble. I could do that.
Hey, Brad.
That's good.
You remember the Drake commercial?
I think you need to flip the mic, though. I think the front of it is facing the camera.
No, this is the front. This is the front. Oh. Thanks, Tread. Okay. But, Ray, like, pretend this is a Sprite. Cole, we'll cut in, like, the little...
The Forever song by Drake.
I'm like, man, I'm here.
Let me lock in.
Last name ever. First name greatest.
Greatest ever.
We know.
Oh, this is awesome.
Come and find me, Nemo.
Hey, that song was actually a banger.
That's actually a great song.
That song kind of goes hard, bro. And if
it does go
hard, generation, because you're old, Tread. Like, I'm sorry, bro, but like when
you don't understand me and Brad playing basketball at recess in sixth grade, listening to that song, like I felt like I was actually drippy.
Crossover, last name ever, first name greatest.
Like a sprained ankle, boy, ain't nothing to play with.
We know.
Voted it off local.
That's kind of like, I think that song
haters, I know
is a lot like, it represents a lot of what Tread hates about Drake, though, because
we
he doesn't like the little, like,
the bars suck.
Yeah, the bars are not the
what
greatest.
I don't like about Drake is that he's gifted some of the hardest, like, banger, like, beats and then just ruins it. Like, the song concept for Enemies is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The intro, hard. Then he starts talking about girls on social media.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
You ruined that song for me. Absolutely.
Like,
100%.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense. Like, I'm in my feelings. Girls are online trying to mess up my day. Like, what, dude?
I got girls in real life trying to mess up my day.
Yeah, like, this a dumb, what, why?
So as everybody can notice, Tread really missed being on the show and he feels a lot better. Don't you, Tread?
About what?
You were sick, remember?
Oh, yeah. All right. I need to tell you guys before we get going. I'll just go into the story. And I guess, like, we'll use this in the pod, but, like, this is just, like, what do I do scenario. Okay. Last weekend. Yeah. As you may know, the Niners beat the Seahawks. But before that game, it's a very serious game, right? Rivalry. Seahawks have kind of had the Niners number for years. Seahawks fans are always talking about the Michael Crabtree tip pass from Richard Sherman interception. We went to the Super Bowl and won, blah, 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 right? So back in the playoffs, first time since that game that the Niners are playing the Seahawks in the playoffs. Big game. Big game. Biggest game of the season.
Okay.
My wife, out of town.
My wife.
She's flying back. She's like, hey, we're going to this wedding. I'm like, okay. And she's told me this for months. I'm like, yeah, I'll go to the wedding with you. No problem. No problem. It'll be after practice. I'll be good. So obviously a week ago, they scheduled the Seahawks game on the Saturday, right during the wedding. Okay. So in my mind, I'm like, all right, what do I do? Do I just wear the doghouse and just say, oh no, I can't make it to the wedding. My tire popped, you know what I mean? Or something. Right.
Yeah.
Because I told her all week, like, I'm going to go watch the game with Koch for a little bit and I'll make it to the wedding. So I get all prepared. I get all my dress clothes after practice. I zoom to Koch's house. Like, I stop by the house for 10 minutes. She goes to the store while I'm going to the house. She texts me, okay, where are you? And I go, I'm at whoever's house we're watching it at. Right.
Okay.
And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, what do you mean? What do I mean? She's like, but you're driving us to the wedding. So she essentially wanted me to DD, and our kids are coming to the wedding, right? We're going to this wedding. This is her friend. Our kids have mutual friends, whatever.
Okay.
So I'm like, well, I'm staring at my buddies in the living room. I'm like, what do I do here? Do I drive home at halftime and take them to the wedding? Or do I just face first swan dive into the doghouse? Just like, hey, I'm not going to the wedding, or I'm going to be late and I'm going to miss the ceremony because I'm not missing this game.
Yeah.
But then it became like the conundrum of, I thought you were driving. I'm like, oh, well, you drive, I'll drive, and then I'll leave my car there overnight. Can't leave the car overnight at the wedding.
Okay. Right?
Mm. At the venue.
Got it.
So now we have two cars and I now have to drive. So I missed the second half of the game, the entire second half.
So you left and the Niners were losing.
The Niners were losing when I left the house. Then they kicked the field goal to take the lead. Then what are we doing squib kicking with 13 seconds left, Kyle Shanahan?
So yeah, what was that?
What is that? That went completely missed because of the second half obliteration that took place on the field. But to give them a field goal in that spot, so dumb. So dumb. But then anyway, so I'm like fist pumping at the wedding. Like, I'm getting alerts. And, like, I turn to my kid, and I'm like, yes! And it's like, do you take her to be? And I'm, like, totally that guy at the wedding, like, looking at the update. It's like, yes!
Yeah.
And so, like, the Niners obviously just reel off, like, three straight touchdowns. And I'm like, hey, honey, like, it's hot in here. I need to go get air. And I walk outside, and I'm like, let's go! Just, like, have to let out, like, an aggressive, like, outburst of joy. But what would you guys have done in that situation? I just felt like I had to go to this wedding, and I feel kind of soft a little bit, honestly, for doing that. I guess that's good husband play, but like also, you know, I missed the second half of what was the obliteration of the Seattle Seahawks, which is something that I would have really enjoyed watching.
Yeah. You did the right thing, Tred, in my opinion. Kraut, what do you think?
I do not have a wife.
Got it. Neither do I.
Great point.
You did the right thing. I mean, you had to do what you had to do. You need to take 17 bathroom breaks, 14 air breaks, and get the highlights best you can. You got to do what you got to do. But you did the right thing.
Sorry.
I feel like you were in an unavoidable situation there. Like, yeah. you had no out. You know. So I think you did the right thing. I would love to hear from our fans before you get into more about the story, about what they would do in this situation if their team was playing in the biggest game of the season, but their significant other had other plans. I would love to see what kind of degenerates our fans could be if it comes to picking between sports and their family. You know, like, what if this was the Super Bowl, Tred? What would you have done? Super Bowl?
Oh, no chance. I'm going to the wedding. No chance.
Okay. Okay. All right. So. No chance. So we fast forward a couple.
Nobody on earth. Do you think people get married on Super Bowl Sunday? Do you think like that exists?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yes.
What kind of person would do that?
Someone who doesn't care unless about football,
you get married, quite honest. Then like it becomes a Super Bowl party. So you get married before the Super Bowl, and then your reception is
that would
now,
be
like,
kind of fire, super,
which actually would be low key kind of dope. Maybe an idea for you two as you guys move on. A little Super Bowl party.
Imagine pitching that to your soon to be wife, honey, fiance. Crowd's, what do you like, got on this?
I've been a Bears fan for 3 years, honey. And this is the biggest game we're playing it ever. Week one of coaching, guys. What do we got? No. We'll get to the dice, Brad. I want to know what you guys, your first week of coaching takeaways are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd, you go first.
No, why don't you go first? I got a lot.
Okay. So first week, was actually pretty good. It went pretty well. I actually went and got lunch yesterday with another coach of ours. So Mr. Coach Professor Soyoka. I went got lunch with him yesterday. And he kind of had the same questions for me. He was like, so week one's done. What are your thoughts? And I was like, he was like, give me some good, give me some bad. And I, you know, definitely good outweighed the bad for sure. I feel like the guys are really liking what I have for them, even if some of it isn't like always the best, cause I'm trying a lot of new things. And that was honestly my biggest fear, you know, first week of coaching, I thought everything I kind of would throw at them drill wise, they would hate, or they would, you know, find something wrong with. Like I'm reading into facial expressions of vet guys like, oh, he hates this drill. Oh, he hates this. But then I learned to kind of, you know, just let it be. Get feedback consistently to see what they thought. And it's very interesting because Kraut and I played with these guys. Some of them we played with for like 3 or 4 years. So it's almost as if we're like, we're definitely like a player's coach to a lot of these kids, a lot of these guys. And
not Kraut during base running though.
No. Yeah. No. Kraut gets on them during base running. But other than that, it's good. And I really wanted to focus. I got advice from one of who is going to be a reoccurring guest, but is a big listener of the pod. He told me, who's also a coach, he told me that, you know, maybe you don't need to be everything to everyone. So make sure that whatever you are going to be, you are really like focused on being the best at a subsection of something, right? Or a small group of something. So when you say something, it has some meaning, right? It has a lot of emphasis to it. And I'm really trying to focus on that because there's a lot of stuff I want to add. And I'm like, you know, I think another coach kind of capped that off better, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, overall, I rate it like a 9 out of 10. Pretty good. Nice. Pretty exciting. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Sure. We'll keep it moving.
Yeah. Yeah. We go.
Kraut, what do you got? What do you got on your first?
Yeah. So, well, while Brad and Brandon were at lunch together, just having a beautiful conversation, I was on my fourth hitting group of that day, 6 out of 6. So it's been a grind, folks. I'm not going to lie.
What's up with these secret coach meetings? You know what I mean? Like having these conversations without us. What do you got on that?
I think that's the reason for the secret coach meetings.
You want me just to like text you everything I talk about?
I mean, it just feels like you guys are having confidential conversations.
Yeah, it's called the big roast of Big Tread. It happens when you don't show up to the.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. I see.
But it's been good. It's been a grind. It really has been a grind. I think one of the biggest things for me is like the perspective change from being a player to a coach. Like, as soon as I was done playing, I was like, when I coach, like, it's going to be minimal talking. I know these guys, they lose focus after about 3 minutes and they just want to throw and hit the ball and run around. And it's like, then I become a coach and I'm like, if I don't say this thing and they go mess up, like, and then they say, well, like, you never told me. It's like, there's so much to be said. It's really easy to kind of be like, wow, like there is a lot. And so it's made me like realize that our sport, it really is so much about education and understanding. And that you just have to put a big emphasis on that. And as a player, oftentimes you just don't really understand that. But I think going along with what Brad said, like I see me being like having played with these guys and having, you know, relationships with them as a friend, I see that as a huge advantage for me as a hitting coach, just because hitting is so hard. So like, when a drill is just ruining a kid's day, like I find it really easy to just like make it about something other than hitting, like make them laugh, tell a joke. Like, these are my boys. So it's easy for me to like get them back on track. I feel like if something's not going well, because you know, it's just like me having a conversation with them as a teammate, as I would as a teammate. So, I think that's been really, really awesome. And I think that's just like hitting in general. Like, you need somebody who's going to be more supportive and more encouraging than maybe some of the other positions, just because of the nature of the beast. Like, it beats you down naturally. So, you really can't harp on these kids, like, if they're struggling. Like, and then the last thing I'll say, first week of coaching that's been really awesome that I didn't obviously see much as a player, was like, getting to work with the guys that I think get forgotten sometimes is like probably been the most, what's the word, like something feels fulfilling. Yeah. Most fulfilling part of what I've done so far. Cause like, you know, you have your starters, your studs, whatever, what have you, that are going to be pretty, you know, they have a lot of their own processes and routines. And a lot of the times it's just like, don't mess that guy up. Like, give him some good constraints, give him a good environment to train in. But the more fulfilling part has been the guy that maybe has been injured or hasn't played much, and kind of revisiting the drawing board, especially a guy who's older and in that position. You kind of get a guy who's like, there's not a lot of time left for me. Like, let's take some risks. Let's see what's there. And that guy not only is fearless, but extremely open to trying new things. And man, like, we've seen some really awesome things with those guys already. So, I mean, I couldn't be happier with the whole process. Definitely a grind, but this is what I signed up for. And I, Cole, get the bleeper ready. I fucking love coaching. So yeah, it's been awesome.
That's huge.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think there's something too for those experienced guys who are kind of like looking for, how can I find a way to get on the field? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, especially for your seniors, because the reality of like, I'm going to be an accountant in 4 months, like, let's get this popping. You know what I mean? Like, I'm willing to kind of do whatever it takes. And I think that's how you like raise the floor too, right? Like, you have like your top end guys who are going to be your top end guys. And like, me and Swarty used to talk about this a lot with base running. It's like Chase Anderson was going to steal like 15 plus bags no matter what we did. You know what I mean? Like, he's just got that. So like, focusing your intent on that guy isn't really going to help us, but like, giving time to that middle tier player who's on the fringe of helping your team, if you can extract whatever out of that dude, that's when like you truly have depth on a roster. And because we all know like injuries happen, right? And so like having a guy who can just step up, and especially a guy who's been there for a while and has that chip on the shoulder of like, I want the innings and I just have seen my buddies do it for 3 years and now I want my time. Like, I think if that guy's prepared and you're doing what you can to make him the best version of him, like, can really change a team season. So that's huge. Big time. Yeah, big time, Timmy Jen.
It's been so, so cool. And like you said, like, those guys, they really have nothing to lose. So like, they get in there, like, there's no, like, you don't have to wonder if they want it. Like, they get in there and they're just like, they're getting after it. Like, it's been the coolest thing to see and work with those guys for sure.
Yeah. Whereas like, the freshman is more like, well, I've got time. So like, you know,
yeah, you just gotta like, make sure, yeah,
it's a different approach. Still building trust with that player too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, as much as they're going to respect you because the other guys respect you, like, those guys are still like trying to fill you out and get to know you and build that relationship, not only as like a coach and like an instructor, but as a human being as well. So like, like, how quickly they buy in and how quickly they're able to make those adjustments, I just like, it's a lot easier for those guys who have been there for a while. Right. So that's cool to hear.
Yeah. I think in terms of raising the floor, like, it's cool to see too. Like, you talk about like, it's really awesome to like walk in and then, you know, that middle tier player that hasn't played much is just putting on like a absolute fucking laser show in the cage. And like, you look and it just like, it refocuses some of the guys that are more naturally talented or get away with, you know, being able to focus less in practice. Like, it just shoots the accountability up. If that player is going to go like beat this drill better than you can, and it's like, well, you're supposed to be the guy, man. Like, get in there and show me why you're the guy, as opposed to it's like, yeah, I just wasn't feeling it today. It's like, well, he felt it. And, you know, like, and you think that, you know, and you're a starter and you can't beat the drill better than he can. Like, he's showing you up right now. You know what I mean? So it's been really cool. I think the floor is getting raised, and it's just so cool to see, like, top to bottom, like, just so much good shit going on. So yeah, I've been really happy with it.
Well, I have some thoughts on ABCA, and I know you guys talked about it. Awesome event. Like, I think there are over 8,500 people there. So, like, that is electric for the community of baseball to be that committed to getting somewhere to learn more and network and do things like that. I think it's huge for baseball. Obviously, Nashville helps. Like, pretty solid location to attract people to want to take a little vacation. But, yeah, I think with ABCA, like, I feel like, and this might be like a hot take, but I thought the main stage was a little weak this year. I mean, not to be like a total a-hole, but I just thought that, I thought pitching was actually pretty solid, but I thought like some of the other presentations were, and I didn't see them all, but I don't know. I'm kind of getting to a point where I'm trying to take like little things here and there from ABCA rather than like, oh my gosh, that's going to change my life type stuff, which happened a lot more when I was young. So maybe it's more me where I'm like kind of entrenched in my ways a little bit more. And, I've been coaching for a while now. So, but I thought that the general pitching chatter, the entire, ABCA has improved. You know what I mean? Like, I think that we're getting better about not just being like, well, that tech is great and all, but you got to throw strikes. You know what I mean? Or like the other side of the coin where it's like, tech is everything and biomechanics, and this is what we really need to be focusing on. Like, I think we're doing a better job talking about how to blend both those things together and being mindful of, like, you know, like Rapsodo or TrackMan or whatever information is awesome. And so is like biomechanic stuff. But if you just have that information just to have it, like, you can really cloud the mind of a player. So how can you mix that into a guy in like his routine or like competitively, like in game, to help him perform? I think like we're starting to have those conversations, and we had two guys on the main stage specifically talk about that. And the Florida State coach, I'm not really sure his name, but I thought he was awesome. He opened up his presentation where I thought he was going to go full blown old school pitching coach, where he's like, no matter what, with this tech and all these new gizmos and gadgets and things, like, at the end of the day, it's about being competitive and you got to throw strikes in game, which I was like, all right, here we go. We're going to go old school guy talking about throwing strikes that he like coaches in the ACC. So it's like, yeah, you get a ton of guys out of high school who are low 90s and are nasty. Like, no shit. You have to teach them to throw strikes now, or like competitively, like, you have to teach them how to compete because their stuff's already good. Right. So, but then he transitioned like, all right, here's a TrackMan report, and here's what like we might see on a TrackMan report that's relevant to a guy's, you know, repertoire. And he was talking a lot about like tunneling and late movement and like pairing things arsenal wise that makes sense for a guy, rather than just trying to create like nasty pitches, like making an arsenal fit a guy and what he already does well, which I think is awesome. Like, I think everybody's chasing like certain metrics, right? Like, a lot of people are chasing like the high carry fastball. A lot of people are chasing like sweepers these days, but it's like, if a guy's repertoire doesn't like, or slot or angle doesn't fit within, like, you know what I mean? For example, like, you're not going to make a supinator like throw a high carry, high efficiency fastball. Like, you can give him a hockey puck as much as you want and have him throw, you know, head high, arm side stuff during, you know, whatever like initiatives you want to do for a guy who you're trying to get to be a little more efficient on the fastball. But at the end of the day, like, that guy produces his best force out of supination, and you're probably going to kill velocity by like 2 to 3 miles per hour if you try to get him more efficient. So it's like, for example, Kyle Bishop is a guy on our team where it's like, he's a natural supinator, and that's also why he throws a banger curveball. But it's like, yeah, from that guy's slot, he throws from a super high slot. If you got him more efficient, like, he would create a ton of IVD on his fastball. Like, we're talking like mid 20s on a TrackMan report, probably low 20s on a Rapsodo, right? But like, instead, he, you know, cuts the ball a little bit, has a little bit of cut ride, stays above the barrel, even if he does have a little bit of cutter action on his four seam. And so, like, it's just, and he also throws it low 90s. So it's like, if I got him at 86 to be a little more high carry, he's probably going to fall off a little bit compared to like being, you know, high 80s, low 90s with a little bit of cut, right? And
yeah,
again, what are you going to do to his breaking ball, right? Like, because I think you have to have like a global approach to the arsenal to where, like, if we make it more efficient, is his curveball not going to suck? I'm sorry, am I going like too, are we going too in the depth here? Like,
no, I'm locked in.
So you're good.
And I thought, like, I thought Matt Blake did a really good job talking about things like that as well, where like they were using one of their bullpen guys, like, who's the guy? I can't remember who it was. Anyways, like the dude sinker, like he was like a one of the best pitches in baseball the year before. And then his sinker kind of flattened out a little bit. Like he was raising slot on the sinker a little bit, and it was killing some of like the horizontal break on his.
It's the name that's like extremely hard to.
Lasagna or whatever. Yeah, I can't.
Lasagna.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
The reliever for the Yankees. Anyway, so he's talking about how like in a short term like window with a small sample size, like that guy was really bad. But they also understand, like, in the past, he's had a lot of really good performance. So it's like, what's going wrong with this pitch and how can we get him back to performing? And obviously with him, like, their sample size, it's funny when they talk about small sample size because they're like, yeah, over the last month, he's been terrible, which is like our entire season in terms of like game sample size. So yeah. It's like, it's really tough to like.
Extremely ironic.
Which is like another thing too, like. We're always comparing our game to like pro baseball or Division One baseball, like SEC, like high level,
yeah,
College World Series, Division One baseball. When in reality, like the game that we're playing on the mound and in the box is very different. Like the swing, bat speed, you know, pitch velocity, pitch spin, you know, shapes can be relatively similar, but like we're playing kind of not a watered down version, but it's just like a different game in terms of the one-on-one battle between the pitcher and the hitter. So like when we're constantly trying to, you know, like we're talking about Texas A&M guy and he was awesome, but it's like, you know, they're talking about a very simplified approach, which works for those guys. And it's a kind of a team approach too, where he kind of individualized it a little bit from guy to guy for sure. But it's like, well, yeah, man, like you also have like some of the most athletic and adjustable movers in the country. And they're all on like million, they're like on 100,000 NIL deals. You know what I mean? Like versus like, I've got Davis Coaster, who's an absolute dude at the D3 level, but like has some limitations body wise. And, you know, we have to kind of fit our approach within that dude. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm not just trying to put Davis on blast. I love you, Davis, but, you know, Texas A&M's athletes are a little.
Davis is a freak.
Yeah. Davis is dope.
I want to, real quick, add to what the FSU coach said that I took something away from, like, on the hitting side. He, correct me if I'm wrong, Tread, like you were saying, which I really love, is like you don't always need the extra pitch. Like you don't always need that. Like if your repertoire is what your repertoire is and it's two pitches and those two pitches are your best two pitches, don't throw the get me over slurve or whatever you have. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a great fastball and a great changeup and those play up well off each other, like just do that. And like, I kind of use that translated to the hitting side. Like we don't have to be 1000% foolproof. Yeah. Like, and you know what? We never will be. So why don't we oftentimes like tailor our approach to what that athlete's good at and just make them really, really good as a coaching staff. Now we can play matchups with that person and put them in the best position to succeed. But we're just setting ourselves up for failure if you're going to ask somebody to do everything on a baseball field. You're going to ask them to throw eight pitches for strikes and they're all good pitches. You're going to ask someone to be able to hit every pitch in every location of the zone. It's like, it's a good reminder that like the game that we play, especially with, like you said, our sample size can be a crapshoot at times. So like be foolproof at one aspect of it and let it play out. But yeah, you always have to kind of remember. I also love the quality of bats against. I love seeing new stats.
That was good. Of. Yeah, I like the quality of bats against. And he also had it like tailored to result too. So it's like weighted quality of bats against.
Can you explain that for the people at home?
Yeah.
So essentially quality of bat is just like any positive at bat for the hitter. So like walk, hit by pitch.
A lot of different results. Walk, hit
hard,
by pitch.
Hard hit ball, which is subjective at our level.
More than four with two strikes, more than eight total.
However many pitches seen in an at bat. Anything that's like deemed by your program to be a
sacrifice.
A situation that is good for the hitter outside of like the result of a hit or not. And what they were doing is they're taking that and flipping it on its head for pitching, but then also weighting results. So it's like strikeouts are worth more points because we know that strikeouts limit runs scored at the highest level, especially like efficient strikeouts, right? So if you can strike a dude out on 3 to 4 pitches, like, one, the ball doesn't go in play, so you don't have to like
worry about errors, about
variance or random whatever is happening.
Yeah.
But like two, you're also like still efficient within your pitch count, right? So anyways, like I'm interested in kind of toying with that, especially with like our analytics interns, is like finding how to weight results. And I think like the way he put it was, you know, you can do it by program, like what your program values, like if your program values strikeouts over walks or A3P or whatever you care about from a pitching staff perspective. Like you can weight the point system on weighted quality at bats against however you like. I would be more interested in like actually like sitting into the results of what actually leads the run and what actually prevents runs, and then like actually doing like statistical analysis on that. But that's like a more in-depth conversation. But regardless, you know, I'm kind of on a tangent right now, but getting back to ABCA, like I thought. Like the ABCA was explained to me in like one setting at the pitching hot stove, which was incredible. So the first person who spoke at the pitching hot stove was, the first person who spoke was Tennessee's pitching coach, who is awesome dude. He won pitching coach of the year, but he also is just like, you know, like somebody was talking about, like, if you get more polished guys and like what you do with them, he's like, well, I don't really feel like we get a lot of polished guys at high school. I'm like, bro, you're at Tennessee. Like, what are we talking about?
Three of your pitchers throw 98 miles an hour.
Just had Crochet and the dude who throws like 105, Joyce. Back to back, like in 2 year span of drafts, dude. Like, come on. Like, what are we talking about?
Your starters throw 98 miles an hour, your starters throw. And they hold that velocity for 6 to 7 innings. Not very polished.
Well, it's I can understand like his point of like that guy probably doesn't have the best fuel on earth, but it's also like he doesn't have to at that level. So it's like, why even focus on it?
All middle.
Yeah. It's like middle heater, slider away. Just like, which honestly, like if you have plus stuff, that's how you should attack guys anyway. Just like, why try to move the ball around? Just let movements go to spots and just stay in the spot. Look at Carlos Rodon in the bigs. He literally has two pitches that he just throws in the same spot every single time. Like his slider's always down and glove side, his fastball's up and arm side. And it like varies, obviously. You obviously don't throw the ball in the same spot every time, but it's like his heat map are just two big circles of slider and fastball. And he's just like, good luck. I have 2+ pitches, guess. You know what I mean? So back to like what Kraut was talking about, like, for example, right now, it's driving me crazy. Joey Harmon has 2+ pitches. He's got a plus fastball with good ride and good carry, and it's firm. And then he's also got like a screwball changeup that's absolutely disgusting. And he's spending like 60% of his throwing economy on or through the offseason on learning like a cut or slider variant. And it's like, bro, like, yes, it would be dope if you had something that moved glove side. But also, you probably shouldn't be spending like the majority of your time on that pitch type because the other two pitches are plus. And if you can keep those in like certain spots around the zone, like you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. So it's like,
Can you throw into righties and away to lefties? That's all you got to do. Like,
it's just like, dude, throw like honestly, this stuff. It's like throw it down the middle and just keep it in zones. Like just keep it up and keep it
down.
Doesn't
matter who's hitting.
You know what I mean? Like that's who you are, and we'll sequence according to what we're seeing swing type wise. But it's like, dude, just throw it.
Yeah,
because your stuff's gross. But he's also the guy who wants to be Greg Maddux. You know what I mean? Where he's like, I need to pinpoint that down and away, and I'm like, no, you don't. You don't. But, you know, you appreciate a guy who wants to hold himself to that standard. But also at the end of the day, it's like you got to understand who you are and what your strengths are. And but anyways, going back to pitching hot stuff, ABCA. So the first person who talked after the Tennessee coach was the doctor who runs the biomechanics lab at Wake Forest.
Okay.
So we're going into like in-depth like biomechanics talk. And then the next guy who comes up, and bless his heart, he's very successful high school pitching coach. He's a head coach. And he's basically just like, hey, if you're a high school coach, you need to have a plan for your pitchers or else they're going to go to these clubs and they're going to leave your program. It's like, here's my sheet. Here's my sheet. Email me if you want my sheet. You know what I mean? And it's like, and then the next guy is Eugene Bleeker.
What happens next?
Eugene Bleeker basically just stands up and goes double birds to the crowd and is like, you know what? I don't care about how you feel. This is the truth. And if you ask me a dumb question, I'm going to put you on blast. And it was just like such a wild sequence of events where you had like, and Eugene like is really good. He's really bright. He works well within the individual. And I think like, that's kind of the thing with biomechanics right now. Like biomechanics are telling us kind of like what the average plus thrower looks like, but doesn't as much account for guys who are kind of on the edges based on like body type and what they show mechanically. So I think like baseball, like we still have a huge gulf to overcome in terms of like, we are starting to understand what we're seeing in biomechanics reports and what like it looks like from a high level, but then we're also struggling to then, okay, how can we make guys better because of it? You know what I mean? So how can we provide initiatives to, and I think like hitting's not even close to being there. So, I just think we have a huge gulf still from the biomechanics side, but I'm excited that we're starting to make that leap. You know what I mean? But the ABCA trade show was dope. Like it was a huge conference room. And it had probably like 9 rows and then the whole nother room where they had the expo theater. And it was pretty dope to see how many, you know, it's a lot of it's fluff. Like a lot of it's like doohickeys that you wouldn't even use for you guys or like you could use, but it's like not really necessary.
Yeah.
But you know, like it's cool to see like Rapsodo starting to make seam shifted wake moves. You know what I mean? We saw like a full biomechanics stand up or setup where, you know, it was like $100,000, but like you could put in your own pitching lab if you want now, which just didn't exist 5 years ago. So it's cool to see that baseball is starting to make moves from a like hardware software standpoint from it's like cool. being able to be more advanced.
But
All in all, like I think it's awesome. Like ABCA is awesome, but I would really like it if we would be able to communicate high level information to like high school coaches and club coaches and even like lower level college coaches to use information and help players develop at a better rate. Because a lot of it is like, hey, this is what success looks like rather than like, hey, here's how you get to success. That's kind of where I'm at.
It's funny because like you go into the conference and I think most coaches go into the conference because you're going to a college coaching convention and you're like expecting this magic. Like you show up expecting the answer, right? To all these crazy questions and you leave with what you probably already knew is like it's context. It's and like oftentimes us as coaches, we do too much. And I think that's kind of like the funniest thing is like here we are flying to another city to learn about coaching to be told that oftentimes. We just do too much as coaches, which is like funny, but it's always a good reminder, I guess. So
was 100% my main takeaway was intervene when necessary. Stop just coaching the coach. Like not everybody has an issue just because he doesn't fit like within like whatever your parameter is of like a good player. Like he's at your place for a reason. He does things that are good. So like if there's an issue where he might get hurt or he's not doing well, intervene. Otherwise, let him be him and just let it go, you know? And I thought that was good. And like just reaffirming like a lot of stuff we were talking about on the way there, crowd, like deceleration is really important. Slamming on the brakes matters, right? And I think like a lot of my main takeaways were like, how can I communicate that better? Because I was already kind of breadcrumbing to that track. But I hadn't been able to kind of piece all that together. And like there are a lot of guys there that were saying things at a high level on deceleration and how to teach it and how to look for it and kind of some strategies to help guys get better. And
is that like the next evolving?
It's the next hot topic. It is the next hot topic in baseball for sure.
Well, I think like we're already kind of there. We just don't teach it well enough. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's really what separates like guys who because every like building the engine is great. And like that's a lot of what we're focused on. And honestly, like a lot of what I focus on, right, with like especially when you do stuff at a high intent, like pull downs and like plyo velos and things like that. Right. Like that stuff's great for building the engine for guys who like have a tough time transferring center and mass down the mound, moving fast, whatever. But if you can't stop it, it doesn't matter.
Just yeah. So matter. What does it benefit aside from health?
Deceleration?
It's
yeah.
It's literally how you like create like a projectile at a high rate, right? So it's like
it's
if I want to move my bat fast, like I eventually need to stop my pelvis and then my bat's gonna whip around that. Same thing with a ball, right?
It's the backside of sequencing. Like we talk about sequencing and everyone thinks sequencing is the engine, right? Like as long as your hips move quick, then your bat will move quick. Well, your hips, if they don't transfer the energy upward, then you just wasted it all, right? Like you can just spin around in a circle, but that's not how we hit, right?
Well, that's dude. And back to like me and Kraut were talking about like arm slot and how like a lot of guys, and this is awesome, like point. If you are coaching your kid to throw over the top because you don't like that he threw a sidearm, but he has no health problems and throws hard, stop. Okay. That's Todd Kraut, shout out. Because your son won't
I feel
tell
bad
you.
About putting my
your
dad
son
on
won't
blast.
Tell you.
I do feel bad about putting my dad on blast. Dad, you were a great coach.
No, you're an awesome
you
guy.
Let me throw a side.
You're awesome.
You should have let me throw a sidearm.
Yeah, I should have, would have, could have.
Because I've been throwing sidearm for the last couple of weeks, throwing BP, and I feel incredible. And the ball's jumping. So,
Wow. That's BP.
I'm just carving thing. These guys up.
No, God, but I forgot what we were even talking about because we went
go ahead. Go ahead. You were saying,
I'm trying to remember.
D-cell,
but I'm trying to remember my point.
Hips.
Oh, no.
Chain. Kinetic
don't
chain.
Coach it out of people.
Don't coach it out of people.
Okay. So, same thing with you, Kraut, where you got coached out. So in high school, like I could like hit home runs during BP. Like I'm a big guy, no problem. Like I do it regularly, had some juice. My freaking summer hitting coach was like, hey, your hips aren't getting through enough. You need to get your hips through. And I'd be taking these BP rounds where I'm hitting like these like wounded duck fly balls into the outfield where they're just not going anywhere. And he's like, there you go. Now you're getting your hips through. And I'm like,
look at all that backspin.
The ball is going nowhere. And before, when you told me my hips weren't getting through, I'm hitting nukes. Like, what do you mean? So then the rest of my career, I'm like, well, I got to keep getting my hips through. And I'm not saying that nuke. I mean, I was a bad hitter, but like.
But that's like coaching D-cell out of an athlete. Like, you straight up right
is,
there.
Is
he
like,
just coached your breaks out of you.
I was never taught D-cell ever. I just like did it because that was like organizationally, it was like hit the ball far. Like, okay, I'll do that. You know what I mean? And you I've had juice like, since I was like a little kid and I was always big. Like, so that like helps obviously, but like I've had juice forever and like never got taught anything with my hips other than like the basic like stuff. And the one thing that did help me when I was a kid was like close off your front foot and hit against that firm front leg. And I'm like, okay. And just wah-bah. Oh, okay. Sweet.
You know what I mean? It's so, all about you like start the process of hitting and it's like hit the ball as far as you can. Okay. And you work your way and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, I kind of figured something out. And then all of a sudden it's not good enough. And then something happens and, oh, that wrecked it later. It also helped that your fences were 200 feet at your high school, Tread. That's why you're hitting them out all the time.
That's not facts. It was 320 to both corners. Don't cap on me. I also I only had three bombs my senior year. But low trajectory line drive guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely plays to your
someone speed, you huh? should have been. Someone you should have been. Right? We should have flipped. I should have launched, and you should have been low trajectory line.
If only we could change. Oh, regardless. What
but I think like the point is that Eugene made, and you said it last week, Kraut. Like we should learn from kids and how they move because like kids who are good at baseball move really well, and you probably shouldn't have to coach it out of them unless they're hurting. You know what I mean? A lot of times when kids get hurt, it's because they're overused. It's not because like something's going on. You know
and this is where I present a challenge to whoever is listening, which is probably mainly baseball people. But I present a challenge to find an athlete that is more athletic than Mookie Betts or Shohei Ohtani or Mike Trout. I dare somebody to show me somebody who is more athletic than those three people, because I thoroughly believe, right, that those three individuals could be the most athletic people alive, purely because like there's this age of baseball, professional baseball players. How much of Mookie Betts and Mike Trout's swing do you think is like trained into them before they become a high level baseball player? How much of it is like natural ability? And I would argue that it's probably quite a bit because they are natural athletes. Like I think it's a real case. Like, baseball players grow up becoming some of the greatest athletes at their respected age. It's just, I think it's almost a fact at this point, but the sport is just all about creating this feel around your body, creating like you in space, how you are in space, how you're able to turn so quickly, how you're able to stop so quickly, right? Which we don't even really like comprehend as kids. Like, deceleration was never something taught to me either. And you learn all of these movements on how to cut things off, change direction, switch patterns, use your hands quickly, use your feet correctly in space, all while maintaining a positive mindset in a failure oriented sport. I don't think there's better athletes out there. So I have a claim. Show me somebody better and tell me why. Like, I would think that would be awesome.
Also, to Brad's point, even though this tangent is super random, I do like your shatter. Stop trying to coach kids to be Mike Trout. Stop trying to get them to move like a guy that they don't have the markers and body type to move like. Like, let them move based on their frame and their body type and what they show from like a mobile or stiff mover spectrum, quad/glute/.
And that's
also height.
Dominant. Yes. Yeah.
Height. Not necessarily weight, but height for
is
sure.
Different.
Please, the strike zone doesn't change them
accordingly.
And that is my point to like show that I'm not crazy and didn't just go all the way to left field, that this sport is the most differentiating sport among individuals. Like, every person is so different, yet the goal is exactly the same for everybody. Every pitch you see is somewhat different. Every ball you field is somewhat different. The game is always changing, but everybody does something different and it still is the same goal. That's why you got to let these athletes do what they want to a certain degree. Like, you at a young age, kids need to play. Just they need to figure out how to overcome this game. And then they start to morph into the athlete they want to be, the hitter they want to be. That was my original point. I think baseball players are the greatest athletes because the game is so unique. Every time you do something every day for such a long period of time, by the way, 162 games, they're doing this consistently every single day for almost a whole calendar year. And they're doing this all the time. These guys are different. They are constantly changing. Mike Trout does not swing like Mookie Betts. That was kind of the point that I didn't hit home with. And they're both unbelievable athletes. That's where I think that it's,
I think
that's where I'm hitting.
Going back to last week, just to like kind of hammer it home, is like, there's really no better way to figure out how you play baseball best than to just play. And I think a lot of the times you can go out and you can like fail in other sports a bunch of times. And like, maybe you need to like look within for like technique or mechanics or anything like that. But like, if you continue to play and you're not hurt and you have somewhat, you know, of a decent success track record, like, you're going to find out more about how you move than trying to solve the problem without going out and playing in this extremely open chain activity that we call baseball. So yeah, also, I agree, Brad.
It's also unbelievable to think about how Mike Trout. Okay. Kraut, when did you develop the most as an athlete, as a baseball player? When did you develop the most? What was your biggest jump? Like from high school, or was it when you went to college?
Probably freshman to sophomore year of college, right?
Okay. And you realize most of these people playing professional baseball, I won't say most, I'll say a good majority of the top 5% of baseball players didn't even get that, right? Like they didn't go to college and have the weight room, have a schedule just for baseball.
What I will say is, like, I have an interesting take on this actually, is like, my biggest jump was because freshman sophomore year, I finally got the weight and the strength that I needed to stop being hurt in the compensating patterns that I was using. Had I not developed those compensating patterns, I would have performed better and been much healthier for the rest of my career, which is what the guys in professional baseball do. The guys down in the Dominican, the reason they're so good is they're not getting trained they're not developing compensation patterns because they just play a lot. Whereas like, I had developed the patterns from coaching and I didn't have the strength that I needed or the weight that I needed to stay healthy while moving that way or to perform well while moving that way. Whereas I was finally able to get there. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I don't know what you think about that, Tread, if that sparks anything for you, but
yeah, I think
that was like the biggest thing for me. It's like I had shitty movement patterns, but I finally got strong enough that they didn't hurt me anymore. And so that's the reason why I was able to have a jump. Had I not had those in the first place, I probably wouldn't have needed that jump.
Yeah, but you were trained partially on how to make that healthier, correct? Do you get what I'm saying? Like you were taught how to lift weights correctly in college mainly.
Yeah, but there's kids that don't ever lift weights and they perform just fine and they're pain-free too. I mean, that's point. True. It's like
I'm just reiterating.
If they move well, they're not going to get hurt moving the way that they move.
You're a stiff strength spectrum guy. You know what I mean? Whereas like those guys are going to have to make strength adjustments to be able to be successful. You know what I mean? Like they don't have like the stretchy, mobile, athletic body type that like he just jumps 33 inches on a vertical jump out of bed without ever doing anything, right? Like there are dudes who are like that, and they typically aren't gonna, as long as they're not coached out of their stuff, like they're probably gonna be pretty healthy most of their career. As long as they have the proper stability and things like that. Like obviously, like there's definitely things that matter, but I do think like that was another thing that really stuck out to me is like when we went to that arm care presentation, we literally just showed up because they're giving away a free beer. So we're like, yeah, we'll go. And that's we true. Walk in and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. And it's
pretty awesome.
Guys just talking about like, hey, like 60% of arm injuries are just strength deficiencies. Like it's just like more often than not, it's because they're prep before season strength wise or like prep during their life strength wise. They don't have the same foundational strength and they haven't done the right things. Initiative wise to be able to be strong enough to sustain through 162 games. So like, that's really like, and like same thing with our guys. Like if the on-ramp for throwing is awesome. It's great. But if you don't do the things in the weight, like the weight room, people are always thinking like the weight room is going to get me firmer. The weight room is going to get me to swing the bat faster. Yes. But the weight room's more important factor is you are now making adaptations to be able to sustain over a longer period of time. You know what I mean? Like so long as your programming fits within that, right? So like that's the more relevant portion of the strength side to me is the health benefit of you being able to sustain over time and be able to recover faster and be able to go through those things. Because honestly, like our season is so taxing. Like you're on the clock for 6 days a week. Your seventh day, you're probably not sitting on your ass and recovering. Like you're probably doing something. You know what I mean? And so like 6 days a week when you're on your feet, you're hitting, you're doing fielding. And if you're a pitcher, like you're still like going through other things. Like you're at team practice. You're sometimes shagging BP. You're doing stuff outside of like what you're doing throwing wise. And I can't even imagine, like as a hitter, man, like a two-way guy, like that's the toughest thing that any year that we struggle with is the two-way guy. Because it's like, he's hitting all week. He's throwing his bullpens. He's pitching competitively. He's taking ground balls. He's taking fly balls. He's doing all of these things. And if that dude isn't mindful of his volume thresholds or isn't like preparing in the weight room prior to a season.
Or there, if a guy doesn't naturally move well in how he swings the bat or pitches the ball, if he has compensation patterns that have been developed, that guy probably isn't a great candidate to be a two-way player because they are going to need volume to be able to keep up with those compensation patterns from the weight room. And at that point, you're pushing the envelope in terms of what's too much, right? Like that guy can't do all those things and really, you know, get his work in the weight room as well. Like there's going to have to be, like you talk about training economy, we got to stop spending at some point. So where are you going to stop spending? Is that guy going to skip a lift or is he going to skip a bullpen or is he going to skip hitting that week? But like the guys that can get
that
done.
He's not skipping hitting and he's not skipping his bullpen. So
the guys that get those done are, yeah, exactly. Like most coaches aren't going to let that happen, even though the weight room is probably the most important thing. Is like the guys that are going to be able to successfully two-way need to move really well already. Because if the bullpen and the swings are going to tax them and we're still going to lift, like we're the cup is almost full at that point, right?
Well,
and
that's the taxation. The taxation is going to happen regardless. It's just like how efficient are you managing stress, right? Like Bodie posted Bodie posted, and I'm hammering home your point. Bodie posted yesterday, there is no correlation to stress. Like there's no direct correlation between stress, elbow stress, and velocity. Like, yeah, they scale together a little bit, but there's no correlation to like, oh, you're 95, you experience this much stress. Like it's dude to dude. It's mover to mover. right? Mm-hmm. And it was like the same thing we were talking about with arm deployment. If you don't let that thing work from in to out and around the elbow, like, and you have like this more like tricep extension move, or you have an elbow climb and the elbow's working above the shoulder, like you are now creating more stress for your elbow and your shoulder. And so as you throw harder, yes, that's going to scale with stress, but because you're not moving efficiently, mm-hmm. you are now taxing yourself at a greater rate. And thus you are now managing your training economy at a whole different level in terms of bouncing back from fatigue.
Yeah. So,
like, I think like that's, but the one thing that did stick out a lot to me during that arm care presentation was like, there's no correlation to like arm injuries in the pros and pitch counts. Like the pitch counts are complete arbitrary numbers, which I thought was like, that's something I've always like thought about too. Is like, I worry about pitch count, not from an injury prevention standpoint, but more from like a, his stuff is falling off and hitters are starting to get him. You know what I mean?
It's and fatigue, I think like it's that's not injury, right?
Yeah. Like it is fatigue, but like you fatigue when you run 5 miles on the treadmill. That doesn't like you. Yes, you are more likely to get injured in that moment, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean you're going to get injured.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So you like, would have kept Blake Snell in, is what I'm hearing.
Like pitching, no, because Blake Snell is familiarity effect. That's why again, that's why there is. But which
baseball is not a vacuum.
Yeah, but. Like in terms of closed loop movements, like pitching is as much closed loop as anything we have in baseball, right? Yeah. So it's like he's doing the same thing over and over again. He doesn't have to make a cut on the ligament. It's not like an ACL where it's like I have to dodge a tackler. Like, no, he's doing the same movement again and again and again, similarly to like gait mechanics of running, right? Like you're doing the same movement again. And there's a little variance from like movement to movement, but like widely, like you're doing the same thing over and over again. But, like, you don't really see runners get hurt at the end of, you know, their run, right? Like, it's usually they get hurt because they then try to run too soon before that, and now they're operating at a deficit, right? Which I thought was really interesting, which goes back to, are you strong enough and are you on-ramped enough to be able to do this activity within the time constraints that you have for yourself? So, like, anyways. So, wow, what a – tangent away from this ABCA, but like fire conversation.
Well, this is what ABCA does to you for all
this
those
is
wondering.
What it's about, guys. We do it for the kids.
Yeah.
Come on.
Throw her to the top.
Yeah.
You're going to hurt your elbow.
Your elbow's going to explode on the field.
I get that you hit tank. Swing like this and you hit more backspin. The ball will fly out of the park.
Backspin. Pew. Open up your hips. Never stop them. Squish them on, brother.
You want to know how you coach really well? You put this on. You go to the dugout. Take a nap. Say, roll out the balls, kids. Have fun. That's what you learn.
If you're coaching on game day, you didn't prepare your guys enough. I'll tell you what, brother. I mean, I think from like a – if you're coaching mechanics on game day, you're an idiot. But like if you're – yeah. I still think you should coach on game day. Hot take.
Right here. Cookie platter, Brad.
More like
why baseball. Are your cookies falling off the platter?
It's time to roll the dice. Well, here's the deal. The Vikings and the Bears. Who was supposed to tell me that Justin Fields was going to come out of the game and so was Kirk Cousins in the middle of that game?
Weird.
Who was going to tell me? Nobody told me.
That's my favorite player and my favorite team. So
yeah, and he has to stay healthy for Kraut.
Go Bears!
The Vikings lost in the playoffs already.
They're frauds. The Giants? Not frauds.
They look good, actually. Dude, how about the Cowboys fans chanting, we want Niners coming out?
What did we talk about, Tread?
We all know this, didn't we? You don't do that. You don't do that. Chant.
You should be happy. You should be happy.
I know it's beautiful.
It's fueling his fire.
It frustrates me because the Cowboys have done absolutely nothing for 20 years.
Hey, whoa. No, they broke the Brady curse. They broke the Brady curse yesterday, and they also broke the natural turf curse. They haven't won on natural turf all year. That was a big win for them.
They did not play Tom Brady last night. That's bomb tradey. Tom Brady retired a couple of years ago. Bomb Trady is a walking skeleton version who's a zombie of who used to be Tom Brady. They didn't have a winning record this year. It's the first year in the career of Tom Brady he hasn't had a winning record. So, yeah,
but he probably still kissed his kid on the lips before the game.
100%. So. And his parents and his
Anyways, Tread, here's the dice.
Bomb Trady, not the same guy as Tom Brady. That's it. We know Cowboys come to Santa Clara, get your ass kicked. Let's go with the dice.
The Santa Clara Niners.
Tread. I can't wait to caddy 18, hopefully.
That's number one. Are we going to go on a public course?
Dye your hair, which I will have to do the Carlos Boozer if I get that, because I ain't got no hair. And number three, Brad, you are
a freaking new daily.
That's right, that's number three. Number four is the Bobby Fischer, which means I gotta insert myself into a chess tournament and get wise, cause I'm ass at chess. Bomb bomb. Now number five, we just added this one. It's a dumb TikTok dance thing. I have to get how many views, Brad?
You have to get 5,000 likes on a TikTok dance.
Likes?
Likes.
Likes?
You have to post a TikTok every day. No, likes.
We will discuss that later. Number 666. What? That's scary. Just kidding. Just 1-6. Bill's challenge. I would love to do that because I'm fat.
Your insides are crying just even thinking about this. Ready?
All right. So those are dice rolls. Let's do it. Yeah. Come on, Brad.
Want me to roll it?
No, I don't want this. But this is what happens when you pick a game.
Let me do a little ASMR. Hold on.
Can't hear that.
Can't hear it?
Whoosh.
This is the ASMR dice of death.
What's the dice gonna be?
Oh, I dropped it.
I can't hear it.
Okay, let's narrow this down. Treadway.
No, show me the dice, Brad.
It's not 1, 2, or 3.
Is it 4?
It's not 5.
Is it 4?
And it's not 6.
Is it 4? Well, I'm going to have to start getting sweaty in these chess lobbies.
Oh, no.
I think I might dress up like a rook. Like, just walk in as a castle. I will take on all of you. I will slay the dragon.
I was really hoping to see you do some TikTok dances.
It could have been worse. I'm actually, you know, it'll be embarrassing, but chess is chess, dude. That's what.
What if do you have to win a game?
No, I think you just have to enter into a tournament.
Let's find one that has a consolation bracket you get 2 guaranteed games too.
Welcome to the youth division of chess, where it's only 6 through 8 year olds and this predator.
Word around the street, this guy got denied taking the ACT. He's on a list.
Welcome to this chess tournament. Chess tournament is sponsored by the College Board.
We're waiting for you to appear. We found you.
We knew you'd be here.
They just have flyers. This is a youth journey.
I mean, hot take.
Have you seen this, man?
I'm glad I don't have to be Carlos Boozer. Sheesh. That was actually the one I was most worried about. This is actually kind of this isn't a bad, six.
Oh, it's just something you're never going to do again.
I'm excited. I'm excited to do this. I'm also, for those of you at home or on the road or wherever you listen or watch your podcasts, me and Crowder are in the process of getting our costumes. We're getting ready to do punishments. I know we've been moving slow, but I assure you, we're locked into doing these things because we care about the fans.
Look out for a video out soon. Yeah.
What just happened?
Brad, watch Harry Potter.
Video coming to a YouTube near you.
It's going to be the most unbelievable content ever.
No, it's if people watch people play video games and react to other people watching video, like the internet is its inception, bro.
Is there still
Harry Potter? I did eat, you know, not a public showing, but a little, you know, for my fans out there of me eating food.
Hold up. Wait a minute. Something ain't right.
Oh, is this like an OnlyFans thing?
OnlyPans?
OnlyPans. You know.
Wow.
Of me eating.
Did you did you have a butterbeer?
I did not. You think you can just find a butterbeer in the middle of Central?
What is butterbeer? What is butterbeer, Brad?
It's ginger beer and something else.
Butter.
I had it before. I've had it. In where they actually filmed. I'm a Harry Potter fan.
Who is Dobby?
Butterbeer ASMR.
Dobby is the elf who dies in the first movie of the seven series. Dobby is Harry Potter's elf.
Master gave Dobby a sock. Dobby is a free.
You guys want to get into this? Kraut, go on your browser right now and search up Harry Potter.
Nope. You want to get an incognito though.
Absolutely. I could get some. You might get some fun Harry Potter trivia. Because
you don't want the public to know
that you're a big old nerd.
They call them Potterheads, actually.
Oh,
get it? Like Potterheads.
They like to keep that a secret.
Okay, let's just go ahead and fire off seven quick ones just to make sure that you actually did this, and it's not a. Expelliarmus. What's the Harry Potter theme song?
I'm not a big Harry Potter guy, so I feel like one of those guys who just kind of insert into the military, but like is, you know, like trying to find his way, you know? You guys know what I'm talking about?
What are the four Hogwarts houses? Harry Potter trivia.
We've got Dumbledore.
What?
Slytherin, Hufflepuff.
What? Ravenclaw. Dude, you didn't even watch the movie. You just said Dumbledore?
Oh, I said
Gryffindor.
Gryffindor.
Dumbledore, really?
Did I say Dumbledore, actually? Okay, yeah. Gryffindor, Slytherin, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw. Next.
Good. What position does Harry play on the Quidditch team?
Oh, he's Wait, that sounds wrong. Hold on.
Dude, you didn't even watch the freaking movie.
You should have.
I'll give a batterer. Batter? I'm making these up as I go because this is not a multiple choice.
Worse.
A scorer, a defender, seeker?
Seeker. I was going to say good snatcher, job. But that just sounded so dirty. I didn't want to say that. So
what kind of?
I'm glad I didn't say snatcher. It. But then I said it.
What kind of?
If you want to see what kind of Brad's OnlyFans, if you want a special audience.
That's not public. That's not public.
That's what kind public. Of pet does Harry own and what is her name?
Ooh, an owl, a white owl.
Yep.
And
starts with a H.
You guys really did this to me a long time after I watched this freaking
bro,
movie.
This is easy. It's Hedwig.
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 Good job.
Hedwig.
Hedwig.
I said Hedwig.
Okay. Can you name four of the six Weasley children? Four of the six Weasley children. What are you guys laughing at? Did I miss something? I looked down.
No, you're good, man.
Four of the six?
Okay. Four of the six.
Fred, Ron.
Oh, bonus. Okay.
Jenny.
Jenny.
They have the older brother who is in, who does the dragon stuff. He was actually dope. Fred, Ron, Jenny.
Ron.
Jenny.
My uncle's name.
You look like somebody who has a public school education.
I do?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay, last question, okay? What is Lord Voldemort's full real name? I won't make you do the middle name, but you better get the first
Riddle.
Good shit. All right. I think you kind of watched, but you also were probably on TikTok the whole time.
No, hold on.
Cue the outro music. Boom.
No, I can't think of the other twins.
Outro music. Yeah.
Do you want him?
No, shut up. I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that.
I'm sorry, man. I was
Charlie. Crying. Charlie is the dragon brother.
That's not
yes.
Right. No, it's not.
He is, or is that the
Bill,
dad?
Bill, Percy, or George?
Oh, Fred and George. Me, Fred and
George. Whoa!
You can buy this version of the podcast
at a Patreon.
Special $4.99 for only a certain audience.
The after hours, BTBB after hours.
It's not a public show.
I don't get the jokes, man. I just sit here and fucking. I don't even know.
All right, guys, I'm gonna go to apply to a bunch of jobs that I'm not gonna hear back about. What are you guys doing today?
Well, you know.
You gonna watch any movies soon, Treadway? You know, okay. All right, enough of the jokes. So Friday.
Are you guys making fun of me? What's going on? Can someone explain these jokes?
So Friday.
We have conversations, me and Brad, that you aren't privy to.
Yeah. We get sports. We get the right to have these conversations.
You guys watch sports?
We watch sports.
In secret.
You guys hung out without me?
Yeah.
Nobody else. Just us.
Anyway, let me tell this story really quick. So we have one thing I'm doing at work right now. This f***er, where'd he go?
No!
Motherf***ers.
So at work, we're doing...
I freaking hate these guys. Freaking hanging out without... Help me.
My face hurts, Brad.
Oh, no. Did I turn off my mic or my camera?
No, we can.
No, it's your video.
I can see you.
You went into like a special secret mode. I forget what it's called.
What are you talking about?
Hey, Kraut.
Oh, you guys are fucking stupid. Nice try. You guys waited till the very last. You guys didn't do your homework.
I'm calling it.
No, we tried. Hold on. No, one more.
Now you're gonna get him. Yeah, now?
One more. Kraut, do you want to send your kids to public school?
No.
Where do you want to send them to?
I want to send them to like an academy where it's like not open to the general. I don't know. Like most people. And you know what? You know, coaching has been awesome. You know, because it's not in the certain sectors, right?
No,
right. We can't. Yeah, no,
wait. When you insert into the military, what's kind of that initial rank? You know what I mean? What do they call those guys?
Yeah, I think lieutenant, captain.
No, that's not it. You got to go farther back. Keep going.
Farther back.
We lost, Brad. Like we lost.
Public.
All right, Kraut's the first winner of the secret word.
Can I say it?
We didn't we could have gotten to
this, I know what it is. About.
Dude, okay, so I was trying the whole show, and Brad would look at me like I was an idiot sometimes, and I'm like, come on! And then you started getting it. And
I didn't, I could not think of a time to segue it when you guys were talking about the ABCA.
Well, the baseball stuff, I didn't really try, but then and then I love that Kraut's getting mad because he feels like we're like doing inside jokes.
Should have ran with it. I think he thinks it's a different word. I'm not even kidding.
No,
I know what word it is.
He knows
what word is it?
It's private.
Yeah, correct.
Oh,
we got him. No. Kraut wins this game. But first one. First one to win.
Boom. Of course, it's difficult to get the public school kid to say private.
I tried, man.
Okay, Athenian.
Do you like that I went into
you guys started talking about OnlyFans when I was like what are these guys are weird as hell, man. I was like, you guys are freaks. I'm like, oh, you just want your little secret room, crowd.
I'm a new guy in the Harry Potter game. You know, I just feel like I'm just inserting into the army. That was just so bad.
Yeah, I was like, what? Go back and look at my face when you say that. I was like, and you're like, no, I mean, not I mean. I was like, nah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So, Tread, you're cooking a steak, homie.
Yeah, that's no cap. That's okay.
Yeah, and, it's really not looking good for the Jim Harbaugh thing.
Yeah, no, that's also problematic.
Extremely.
Yikes. Yikes, population me, bro. Well, everybody, thanks for coming. We just want to thank all of our sponsors. You guys are awesome. We appreciate you. And that's Phil's 1500 subs. That's Black Dog Bar and Grill, Altamari Travel, Baseballism, and as well Hank B. Patterson, who's probably struggling right now as his Vikings have been determined to be frauds. So we were going to have Hank on this week, but to preview Vikings Niners. Didn't happen, though, because the Vikings are fraudulent. So join us next week as we watch the Cowboys get smoked by the Niners. And, you know, we'll preview the rest of the playoffs.
Go Boys.
And, yeah, it's been an awesome show. Thanks, guys, for coming. See you later.
Yeah. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.